Food writing isn't just about knowing what you like, and perhaps more importantly, what you don't. The best culinary titles understand the art of eating on a deeper level and know how to capture it all on the printed page. We'll find out how the experts do it and what they read today on The Stack. From Midori House in London, this is The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis with me, Tom Edwards. Later in the show, we'll dial up our friends at German magazine Stern for a peek at their next issue.
This year we were very, very lucky because the French photographer Fabrice Dallaire-Anze, together with our reporter Matthias Schmidt, were able to do a really nice feature on the most interesting actors in Cannes.
That's a little later. First, I hope you're hungry because we're all about food on the printed page this week. A few titles whet the appetite better than The Gourmand. Convenient enough, we've got the magazine's editor-in-chief and creative director and all-round good egg. I'm going to throw that in there. He's here in the studio today. David Lane, welcome back to The Stack.
Good
to have you with us, as always. Also joining us, two guests, how lucky we are, is the restaurant consultant and managing director of Code Hospitality, Adam Hyman, who's here. Adam, welcome back. Good to have you
with us.
Good also,
to see you.
Two for the price of one. That's good fun. David, I'll jump to you first of all because, yeah, we've got The Gourmand. You have a copy in front of you. How's it all going? I guess is my rather predictable opening gambit.
It's all going very well. This actually launches tomorrow, maybe because of the cover. This has never really happened before, but it's actually sold out already.
That is not bad going, as I understand it about these things.
That does make it sound a lot more fantastic.
Describe this cover, though,
and
maybe people will understand why.
But just to give a bit of background to show that I'm not being completely ridiculous, obviously distributors take their fair amount of magazines, so you're left with your amount. We take an amount after subscriptions and everything that we expect people to buy over 6 months, and we put this cover out on the internet last week and they've all gone.
Could it be because of this chap on the front?
So it's the real, actual, genuine Sesame Street Cookie Monster we managed to broker an interview with, and Roe Etheridge, the photographer, shot him at his home in Sesame Street.
I don't know why I'm laughing. That's completely plausible, isn't it?
He's a real... Lots of people are saying, oh, it's so hard to interview a fictional character. I mean,
he's a charmer.
He's real.
Was he well-behaved?
He was very well-behaved. It's very serious. He's got quite a big team of people around him to make sure that everything goes smoothly.
Entourage.
And he's a brand, so it has to be maintained. But he surprised us with some of the things that he said, and the photographs are fantastic there. I mean, I don't know if you know Roe's work, but he's a fine art photographer. He's represented by Gagosian and has his own art practice, but he also shoots for fashion titles as well and has a commercial practice. But all of his work's kind of repurposing consumer culture, I suppose, or contemporary culture in interesting different ways. So he seemed like a good person to shoot him. And when he told his children that he was coming over, he couldn't really say no, even when he found out how much money we didn't have for it.
Exactly, it wins people over. Adam, is that I don't know, is that a trickier client than some of the people that you've had dealings with? Probably hairier, isn't he?
Yeah, I'm intrigued. I think the front cover looks brilliant.
He's sort of bursting out of it, I suppose. We can whet people's appetites with that, isn't
it? and I guess it's very different to what you probably see on a food magazine. I think it's brilliant.
There are a few people who embody a particular food stuff. And I don't know if it was nominative determinism, whether that was his name, then obviously it was proven that he was going to get into cookies or
first.
The other way around.
With his recipe for cookies is in the back, so
great.
You can make it.
You can make the Cookie Monster's
and
cookies.
And there's lots of insights from him about his eating habits. Cookies are only a sometimes snack. He does promote healthy eating as well.
See, that's interesting, because I've never seen him do that on the street.
Very on trend, though, healthy eating.
Adam, well, speaking of trends, Adam, how's things in your world? We're looking at sort of restaurant business. We've talked often before about, you know, sort of London foodie scene.
Yeah.
And it's certainly the case, I guess, that we've never had, you know, foodie types, so many delicious titles to choose from. Are you still seeing more new specialist titles appearing that reflect some of the actual trends you're seeing on the sort of restaurants side of things?
Yeah, well, the magazine I have in front of me actually is a really good example of that, called Pit, that launched last week. And it's all about cooking on fire, which obviously is not a new thing in terms of kind of how people have
it's
cooked.
It's probably about as old as it gets.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's become a real trend, especially in London, for lots of restaurants that have been opening that have really been focusing on cooking on, they call it live fire. So the big thing is kind of the chefs cooking the food in front of you over wood, though. It's not over charcoal. And yeah, the magazine launched last week, first issue. It's put together by a lady called Helen Graves, who's a food blogger and become a publisher and writer. And they've got some really nice pieces in it. I'm just kind of flicking through. Very monocle in the sense that they kind of travel around the world and look at the best barbecue places and the best barbecue countries. They have a really interesting piece on the science of smoke. So Helen actually gets behind why cooking over wood actually tastes, you know, how it affects the food and why it tastes so good. And there was another piece that I looked at. Oh yeah, they look at different types of ribs. So they go through pork belly ribs, lamb ribs and beef ribs and how to eat them as well as cook them.
It's pretty good. It's a bit of a primer. And David, I guess that, you know, it's interesting when we talk about, you know, sort of trends and trend setting, in particular this sort of meeting of printed matter with the foodstuffs. Do you find that has how it fits into that picture, has that changed at all during its life? I mean, it's always been about great photography, great photographers, you've already described in this issue. Do you feel that relationship has changed though?
I don't think so, actually. I mean, it's about the writing, really, and the imagery that accompanies it, and it's sort of more, I would say, timeless thoughts on the subject rather than following trends which come and go.
Trend setting, maybe.
Perhaps, if in the eye of whoever reads it, if there's something they want to take out of it. But I think, you know, there's lots of good voices and good platforms for that kind of commentary on what's happening now, and those things exist and always have done.
Yeah.
And I think what we were offering with this is something a little bit different, which was more of a compendium of people's thoughts around the subject and the work that they make inspired by it, whether that's visual or written.
For me, that's the kind of the beauty of the Gourmand, is it's the sort of thing you'd keep and then hopefully go back to your bookshelf in a couple of years time, pick out a copy and flip back.
Definitely.
And read through it.
And it's very much designed to be like that, in the, you know, the format remains the same.
Yeah.
The sort of physicality of it is designed to last much longer than some other titles would be. You know, the cover's kind of laminated and it is designed to be kept. The features are, we don't really have that kind of disposable front section content that maybe isn't relevant in a week or something. It's just straight into bigger.
It's the opposite of ephemeral.
Yeah.
I haven't had a chance to delve through myself yet. Any standouts? I'm aware it's always difficult to choose, like, their favourite children. But what particularly can your readers look forward to getting stuck into?
There's a really, really beautiful piece on Georgia O'Keeffe's house and her cookbook and her cooking habits and her kitchen. And we sent a photographer down to New Mexico. And that's written by Patrick Bagley. It's amazingly well researched. There's a really interesting interview with Nancy Silverton. Obviously, The Cookie Monster, which I've mentioned, a thing on snails. Gary Indiana, the author, has written a piece about lobsters called Seven Lobsters, which is a kind of, I think, piece broken down into seven little sections, which is fairly apocalyptic. I think it happened, like, when we were commissioning, it was just after the election in America, and the first draft of it was very gloomy. And by the end, it's slightly gloomy. And the photo essay we commissioned to run alongside that is a kind of using the lobster claw as a way to sort of show this slightly falling apart, apocalyptic gloom through seven stages.
Okay.
Almost like...
It does sound very...
I'm super intrigued.
Almost like the Statue of Liberty at the end of Planet of the Apes.
Okay.
That kind of thing.
Right, so sort of partially consumed by the ravages of the environment, that kind of direction. I feel the ethos after the last few months. Is there a silver lining in there?
There's lots of really great stuff, like lightest. I mean, you've got the Cookie Monster end.
How much more?
And then you've got Gary Indiana. There's Wayne Thiebaud, a wonderful painter who does incredible paintings.
So there's a good dose of levity in there as well.
And there's a piece about the world's only truffle dog university in Italy.
Oh, well.
Oh, my God, that sounds brilliant.
That sounds exactly. I was
Truffle Dog University.
Yeah.
Do they get little mortables and gowns when they graduate?
I hope so.
Is that too much to ask for? Adam, what about other titles that have caught your eye recently? You mentioned Pitt. What else have you brought with you?
Well, talking of America and kind of the gloom and doom, I don't know if you guys have seen, because I don't have it in front of me, sadly, but the new front cover of Tapas magazine, where they've done that great image of Donald Trump but using food. it's definitely worth looking at if you
if you've seen it. It's processed meats.
Oh, it's brilliant, and it's kind of I think they've got a banana to depict his his blonde weave.
It's definitely there's a hammy faced quality.
Yeah, no, it's very good, and that's a very good magazine. I'm a big fan of Noble Rot. I think it's been mentioned on this show a few times before. I like drinking my wine. I can't say I know a huge amount about wine.
Never let that stand in the way.
No,
it's my adage.
But that's the thing I like about Noble Rot, is because they've got some great content in there that's kind of food and restaurant related. So they had a great piece in the current issue where one of the founders did the kind of Last Supper with Giles Corran and Marina O'Loughlin, who are two very well-known restaurant critics in the UK. And then a chap called George Reynolds, who is a great up-and-coming food writer, did a lovely piece on A.A. Gill, who obviously passed away at the end of last year. And then a good friend of mine, Zaren Wilson, did a really lovely piece on solo dining. Yeah, it's a really good magazine, and I'm a big, big fan of it. And they've also got a great wine bar and restaurant on Lamb Conduit Street, which
they're
is
really
always
good guys.
And yeah, and they're just fun. And I like how they don't take it too seriously. It's just a really fun magazine, because sometimes wine magazines or wine-led content can be a little dull.
Ironically, it can be a little dry.
Yeah, well, quite, exactly.
I felt somebody needed to do it.
Someone needs to say
it. What about that point? I mean, we were joking about levity, and obviously the Cookie Monster is bursting out of the cover of Gourmand, which speaks volumes. But there is still, David, isn't there, a knack to covering these things with a lightness of touch, because, you know, I'm sure you still see it all the time, and Adam, I'm sure we've talked about it before, there can be something rather po-faced about whether it's, you know, the intricacies of wine or food. Do you ever get any sort of blowback on that? Do people say, well, you shouldn't be having so much fun with all of this? It's a serious business, you know. Or are people generally rather on side?
I don't know. We've managed to kind of avoid it and make content often more about the people that make content than about the subjects that they're making it, if that makes sense. So, you know, we featured a lot of restaurant critics, but really talking about their beliefs and their thoughts rather than ever reviewing any restaurants.
Stay away from reviewing restaurants.
Yeah, we've sort of diplomatically managed to avoid it. I think that, you know, the more people you speak to, the more people say, oh, it should be fun, you know, wine should be fun, food should be fun, and actually it is. And I, you know, my first ever job in London was at this very pompous wine cellar where everything was bought at auction in Bordeaux, and actually the guy that ran it, his favourite wine was you could buy in Sainsbury's. You know, I think it's like when you actually really get to know the people that are involved in this world, the more you find out that it is really, it's not impenetrable and it's not intentionally difficult. I think that's almost built up by the sort of hangers-oners around it.
Well, just before we wrap up, you did bring in one other title. What have you got there? Because this caught my eye.
Yeah, well, I can't remember where I actually picked it up. It was last week somewhere. I think it was in a restaurant or bar in East London. It's called Campai. Now, it is published and backed by Suntory Brewery. So, but I really liked it. I thought the front cover was very interesting. It's obviously a strong focus on drinks, but they had a really funky kind of pull-out map that was picking out the best mezcal and tequila in Mexico.
I hope it's a simple to follow map, especially if you're following it and drinking en route.
I think, well, it depends how much you drink. That's a good point. But I think
just drink about the mezcal and imagine.
It looks fairly simple.
It takes
simple.
You straight there.
And they had some really nice photography. They've got a feature on the art of the cocktail where they'd kind of produce some nice pictures of different cocktails. They ventured down to Southeast London to speak to a glassblower, and they had a really nice feature actually, which I think not enough food media does, about kind of food and drink and fashion, because food and drink is fashion. And they were talking about kind of how the cocktail is the only drink to have its own hour and dress code, which I thought was really nice. And they kind of ventured through the different generations and the different decades of how people dress to go out and drink. Yeah, I thought it was really nice pick up.
That's a nice point to end on. Drinking dress code. Do you follow one? David, self-imposed?
Most definitely, yeah.
What's it involved?
Silk dressing gown and velvet. Yes. Velvet custom initialed slippers.
Oh, I'm right on my
like it, yeah.
Feet on a dog. Log fire.
Sedan chair. Adam, what would yours be? Would it be that sort of...
Yeah,
all kind
of, or in a sun lounger somewhere with a nice cold glass of rosé, maybe. But
yeah, that sounds better.
Okay,
yeah.
Let's wrap up the program and hit the loungers, gents. Wonderful to speak with you as always. I'm very excited to hear more and read more from Cookie Monster, in particular.
Yes.
David Lane from The Gourmand. Thank you very much, Adam Hyman from Coach Hospitality. Thanks both for being here on The Snack.
Thanks very much.
Thanks.
You're listening to The Stack on Monocle 24 with me, Tom Edwards. From pots of skyr to the salty pleasures of saltfiskur, you might have noticed a spike in the popularity of Icelandic food in your local supermarket recently. And as if we needed any more reason to be curious, the recently launched magazine Fida, which means food, is setting out to capture Icelandic cuisine in all its chilly beauty. Monocle's Fernando Augusto Pacheco spoke to the editor of Fida, Gudbjörg Gizuradóttir.
The magazine is called Fida Food, and Fida means food basically in Icelandic, so it's bilingual. And it's about Icelandic food culture, nature, and creativity. So my idea for this food magazine is basically based in the beginning of my Icelandic magazine, which is called By Nature. And it's about green living. And I've been publishing that for 7 years. But I felt it was time to do something more than just in Icelandic. We are only like 300,000 people living here in this island. So it's kind of hard to grow with a niche magazine. And now when the tourists and the visitors that are coming to Iceland are exceeding our population, it's estimated about 1.5 million people coming this year. So I thought, okay, why not just take a step, make an English version or like bilingual version that I can both sell my Icelandic clients and to the travelers coming to Iceland.
And exactly, and as you mentioned, you know, Iceland, you know, have a fairly small population, but the interest for Iceland worldwide is immense. Tell us a bit more about the food scene in Iceland. I read an interview you gave that it really changed a lot in the last 20 or 30 years, right?
Yes, it changed a lot. So it's interesting that, you know, I'm not that old, but I've experienced a lot of change. I mean, just when I was growing up, there were very few restaurants. We would eat home, basically, and basic fish and potatoes, that was how we prepared fish, like just boiled. And now Reykjavik is filled with excellent restaurants. Young people are rushing to become chefs because that's like the hot thing in Iceland now. And we are also much more aware of our ingredients, you know, the food. It's very clean and we have a lot of good ingredients here in Iceland. And we're using that to our best advantage.
Tell us about which sort of stories did you cover on your first issue. I'm curious, is it perhaps like recipes or the profile of a chef? Tell us a bit more about which type of stories will you be covering.
Yeah, it's not the typical recipe magazine. It's more about stories and behind the scene. And for example, I also mentioned it's about Icelandic food culture. So we pick things that are, for example, we just talk about the Icelandic story about the pancake, for example. And many people don't know that the Icelandic pancake is not that different from other pancakes, but we do it with cream and certain jam, which is it's pretty unique to Iceland. And it's a nice story in this first magazine about this chef who was cooking for the president. And he was always like trying to get the pancakes to be as a dessert. And finally, he was allowed to give it to Gorbachev. And after that, the pancakes were like the staple dessert because it was so popular. And it was so much unique. Sometimes we don't realize what we have, what is unique, until, you know, someone points it out to us. So that's one story. And then we cover all kinds of, you know, stories about this potato farmer, you know, this young woman, Icelandic woman, 20-something, opening this amazing restaurant in Berlin. We cover local food fair, actually with recipes. We take a whole lamb and cut it into pieces and do all kinds of things with it. And then we also take, what was one of my favorites is a photo series or photo essay of kids tasting all kinds of weird Icelandic foods. And we have their portraits, which are pretty funny to look at. Then we have a Japanese woman who comes here every year, and she kind of goes to the Icelandic beaches, picks all kinds of stuff that we almost don't look at as a food, but she uses it in her cooking, and we are like following her along the Icelandic shores. We try to incorporate, you know, clean eating and nature and sustainability and local food, of course, into the whole thing.
Another thing I'm curious, tell us a bit more about kind of the business plan of the magazine. How often will it come out? And perhaps, are you thinking already about the stockist for the magazine? Is it going to be fairly international? So, for example, if a listener from New York or London, where can he or she grab a copy?
The reason I have it bilingual, both in Icelandic and English, is so I could also sell it to my subscribers and to foreigners, because it's very hard. I mean, it's a tough business, so you have to be very resourceful. So having it also in Icelandic and being able to sell it to my clients here was very important. And then this makes it possible for me to kind of try it out, basically. So this is my first issue, and it's going well so far. I'm selling it in London and New York, in Amsterdam, Sweden, Berlin. So it's kind of like I'm getting really good feedback from those stores that I've been sending the magazine out to. And my plan for the future, basically, is I don't have a 5-year plan, but the next step is to do another one this fall. So it's going that well, I decided to take another step and do another one.
That was Gudbjörg Gizurardóttir, editor of the Icelandic food title, Fida, speaking to Monocle's Fernando Augusto Pacheco. This is The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis with me, Tom Edwards. Let's cross now to Germany and the busy editorial offices of one of our favourite weekly titles, Stern. The magazine's deputy editor-in-chief is Giuseppe Grazia, and he joins us now on the line. Hello, Giuseppe. Good to speak with you, as always. Let's jump straight in and tell us a little bit about the cover images and the cover story. What was behind the editorial process that went into this edition?
So our new issue is about Trump and Obama. And on the cover, you can see both the acting president of the United States. He is in the front of our cover, and behind him is Obama. And the headline is The Two Faces of America. And the reason why we did this story, or why we will run this story this week, is because both Trump and Obama are this week in Europe, as you know. Trump, for the first time, he will meet with the leaders of the European Union in Brussels. Also, he will visit the NATO. And as you know, both organizations were criticized by Trump in the past. So for us, and I think for all European people, both meetings will be interesting to watch. What Trump will say, if he will be a nice US president with the European leader, or I don't know, maybe he will be, he will again criticizing the EU and also the NATO. And on the other hand, former President Obama is coming to Germany. He will be here in Thursday and Friday. And he is in Berlin for the launch of the Reformation Summer. And he will be there with Chancellor Angela Merkel. And he will engage in a conversation on the topic of being involved in democracy. And you have to know that Obama in Germany, he is still very popular. Especially since Trump won the election, the German people and also the German press is very concerned about Trump and his administration. So our goal with our cover story was to get a sense about these two presidents. Our correspondents in New York and also in DC spoke for the story with a lot of people about these two opposing presidents. And we think that America is more divided than ever before.
And what about the German view? And I wonder, your Stern readers, is their view divided too? Because it was very interesting that obviously Merkel makes time for Obama. And it's funny, you know, he is in one respect yesterday's man. And yet
yes.
It still makes sense. It seems to make sense politically for her to still be very cozy with Obama. You know, is that striking a balance that your readers engage with?
Yes, absolutely. We got a lot of mails in the last couple of weeks, Obama, as I mentioned before, he's very popular with German people, with our readers. In the past 8 years, when we did a cover story with Obama, it was always a successful issue. Even in, you remember, there was a time when the German people and also Merkel were angry because of the spy affair. The NSA taped the mobile phone of Merkel. And even then, Obama was still in Germany a very popular president, US president. And you have to know that for the German people, it's very important that our leaders, the German political leaders, are always in a very good relationship with the US president, because there is no more important relationship between Germany and US for the German people. They don't trust Trump. That's the issue. They don't trust him. They don't are happy with his administration. In the end, it's all they did trust Obama, and they don't trust Trump.
Giuseppe, let's move on to perhaps one of the only worlds that can be more murky and complicated and backstabby even than politics, and that's movies. And of course,
yes.
Cannes Film Festival taking place in France.
Yeah.
It's always another fun event to get stuck into. What's been the Stern take on Cannes this week?
We covered this issue every year, but this year we were very, very lucky because the French photographer Fabrice Dallaire-Anze, together with our reporter Matthias Schmidt, were able to do a really nice feature on the most interesting actors in Cannes. You know, it is not easy to do a photo feature while a film festival is going on. Everybody is busy, tired. So, but Fabrice was able to convince to pursue actors like Arnold Schwarzenegger, the amazing Isabelle Huppert, one of my favorite actors, the beautiful Monica Bellucci, the legend Clint Eastwood, or director like Werner Herzog, the German director Werner Herzog, to spend time with him. And he took wonderful portraits of this famous people, a famous actor for us. And we did a great story, a beautiful story in our currently issue. And we run 10 pages about Cannes and this actress in Cannes. So we were very happy. And I think our readers will appreciate that we have this story.
Many thanks, as always, to Giuseppe Grazia from Stern magazine. And that's all we have time for on this week's show. Thanks to our producers, Ben Ryland and Fernando Augusto Pacheco, and our editor, Claire Urban. Comments or queries or general abuse, believe me, it's all welcome. Write to fp@monocle.com. That's where you'll find Fernando. And do join us at the same time next Saturday. This is The Stack. I'm Tom Edwards. Thank you very much for listening.